This is Focus
with Cassie McCullough
on ABC Radio Sydney.
Hello, good to be with you on ABC Radio Sydney. I hope your morning's going well. Now, if you're feeling a little disillusioned by the whole parliamentary system and the way decisions get made, or perhaps don't get made, about the best way to run the country, well, then get this. In France this month, a citizens' convention on climate has presented a charter to the nation after 9 months of work. And in response, President Emmanuel Macron announced a $24 billion funding scheme, saying, "I am committed to taking strong decisions." Well, strong may be an understatement, because the decisions that the 150 people in the Assembly arrived at after months of deliberating for all that time, well, they're quite, dare I say, formidable. They've decided that to reduce emissions, they recommend that France reduce consumption of meat and cheese by 20% within the next 10 years. Now, remember, this is the French we're talking about, with the suggestion that all forms of catering, like school meals and workplace canteens, be obliged to adopt this target, and there be mandatory vegetarian options in all menus. The Assembly also decided that France should adopt a 28-hour working week, because to consume less and produce less, it's necessary to work less. I like that one. There'd be mandatory energy obligations on all new buildings and renovations, and then a rule about heating and air conditioning to reduce energy consumption. You would be encouraged not to use heating or air conditioning when the temperature is between 19 and 30 degrees. What do you make of that? Would you consider being on one of these assemblies? That's ahead of us this morning on Focus. Well, COVID-19 has certainly shaken up the status quo for us here in Australia, right around the world, in fact. But despite economic challenges that the world is facing, repeated polling in 14 countries, including Australia, has found that two-thirds of citizens still want to prioritise climate action in any measures aimed at economic recovery. And in France, get this, the government has done something really quite innovative to work out how best to spend money on countering climate change. At President Macron's direction, they've organised a citizens' convention on climate. Well, how would such an idea work here? And would it work? Luca Belgiorno-Nettis certainly thinks so. He's founder and director of New Democracy, an Australian not-for-profit research organisation which is focused on political reform. And Luca's also the managing director of Transfield Holdings and Prisma Investments. Luca Belgiorno-Nettis, hello.
Thank you for including me in your program.
Oh, great to have you along. Now, I don't want to be rude, but part of me thinks this story falls under the category of those crazy French.
Well, that's right. But in fact, you know, the crazy French have really got some competition now from some crazy Anglos and crazy Americans.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, exactly. This is a movement, a political movement that has been taking off in patches around the world, and you're one of the great proponents of it here in Australia. Describe the process that the French undertook when they were considering the climate and what actions they should take collectively.
Well, the process is this umbrella process called deliberative democracy. It is, as you say, it's been growing around the world in sort of reaction to the frustrations with the traditional representative democracy. And so the OECD have just released a report which was research on how often this deliberative democracy process has been undertaken in the last 30 years. And there are now some 200 plus examples, and it's just been exponential in the last 10 years with over 100. And the OECD describes it as a deliberative wave. So this is sort of a growing sense of how you might do democracy better by involving everyday citizens in public policy. And the French, of course, with their recent travails on the gilets jaunes, the yellow vests, and all of the protests in the streets in Paris, instituted then a so-called grand debat, big debate. Macron and the government recognised that they needed to do something to quell all of these concerns about, you know, top-down government not listening to the divide that's happening in France between the rich and the poor, and et cetera, et cetera. And out of that came this recommendation to have a citizens' convention on climate change.
Yes, so there'd been this grassroots reaction against some of the policies that were being instituted in France that some in maybe rural parts of France felt were aimed sloppily and disadvantaged them. And there was this sort of France-wide uprising, which was quite serious for a while there. So
yes, in the French tradition, they sort of, you know, stormed the barricades,
yeah. Mm-hmm, or ripped up the streets, or whatever they do. They're quick to get to the streets, actually, the French. So they decided to hold this citizens' convention. Now, this was before COVID. It should be pointed out that they did this. For people who haven't come across this, how does it work, and why isn't Parliament the obvious place to have a discussion like this?
Well, in the background of frustrations with the way parliaments generally work, in that they are set up as adversarial contests because of the electioneering mechanisms that are behind representative government, so people get up and basically have got to sort of outscore each other. And this is where academics and other political scientists would argue that we've got to explore better ways of developing public policy that are more collaborative and inclusive. So it's made up of three essential mechanisms. One is representation by way of civic lottery, so-called democratic lottery. So it's like the jury process. It is a random recruitment of the population at large to form a so-called mini-public. So in the case of the French Citizens' Convention, it ended up with 150 representatives of the French population from all around France and their territories.
Mm-hmm. And they did this by phone, and they contacted more than 250,000 people randomly on telephone numbers. They used 85% mobile phones and 15% landlines, which must reflect the ownership of mobile phones in France. They asked, there was a message saying, would you like to be part of this climate convention, which has been announced by the president, looking at whether we need to go further and faster in the fight against climate change.
Correct. That's right. And it turned out that actually half of those phone numbers didn't exist. But anyway, they they were sort of defunct or whatever.
Dodgy burner phones, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So they ended up with about 125,000 working phones. Mm-hmm. And from those 125,000, an amazing number, like 50%, of the respondents said they were prepared to go into the pool that would then be the place from which the 150 were selected, mm-hmm. once again randomly.
Is there any financial reward or compensation for this? Why do you think the take-up was so great?
Well, and this is the other thing. So I mentioned the first thing in there are three elements to deliberative democracy. One is better representation. The other is authority. So if people recognise that they are going to have a say in public policy, a real say in public policy, then they're prepared to actually spend the time to do so. In other words, to accept to go into a pool. So if you get an invitation from the President of France that there will be a citizens' convention, recommendations of which will go unfiltered to the French Parliament, you're inclined to be involved. There was a compensation for it. It was essentially based on the current jury compensation in France, which is about 85 euro a day. So they ended up making that compensation for the period, which was the 6 months, 1400 euro for the whole period. I mean, it was a very organised process. The whole convention cost in the order of 5.4 million euro. So it was not a cheap exercise. So it was very well organised. As I said, apart from the payments to the participants themselves, their accommodation and their meals were provided, their transport was provided. There was a whole oversight team. There were experts, professionals who obviously came to the convention and provided information and reports, etc., over this period of 6 months. So in order to make the process efficient, they decided to break the 150 into five groups, one to do with transportation, another to do with consumption, another to do with food, another to do with waste and work and production, and another to do with housing.
Okay, so the process was really quite meticulous, well-funded, and what their goal was, their task, was to come up with proposals for France about ways to reduce emissions, to reduce their impact on the climate. Let's talk about some of those proposals, because they are really, truly radical.
Yes, so most people think, I'm ignorant too about the carbon footprint of a lot of our food consumption. I mean, my kids are, you know, right on top of this, and they've been telling us, look, hey guys, you've got to change your eating habits, and meat is one of the worst. It's right up there in terms of carbon footprint because of the land clearance, leaving aside the methane production of the actual cattle mm-hmm. themselves. You know, it's the land clearing that has a big impact, and well, the utilization of so much land for meat production. So the citizens are recommending that all foodstuffs be labelled with their carbon footprint, and that there be an encouragement for every restaurant to have a vegetarian option on their menu, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are 150, it's very curious that there are 150 citizens involved in this convention, and there's 149 recommendations that have come out. So it's very comprehensive.
It certainly is. So in the food, they're saying a 20% reduction in consumption of meat and dairy products by 2030.
Yes.
So out of 5 days, one of those you don't eat meat or cheese, which is, you know, part of reducing the livestock load and therefore the carbon footprint. And also that all forms of collective catering, as you pointed out, restaurants, but also school meals, workplace canteens, obliged to adopt this target, and an advertising ban on junk food as well, which is part of it. So
yes. There's really, it's so exciting, isn't it? I mean, I don't think you need to be an eco-terrorist to sort of recognise that these sort of measures are sensible.
Well, they're amazing. I mean, this is radical reform. So another one is about heating and air conditioning, and this is something we could really think about in Australia, particularly on the cooling side. So to limit energy consumption in homes and businesses, people would be encouraged to stop heating or air conditioning when the temperature is between 19 and 30 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
So, and that would apply not just to homes and businesses, but medical facilities, nursing homes, schools, childcare facilities, right across the board.
Well, you've actually gone into more detail than I have in terms of you've been reading these recommendations to that level. I mean, I'm not sure about, you know, the application right through the health sector, if you like. But I think, I mean, we know, for example, in Japan now there is a recommendation, or they in the public service do not have air conditioning coming into play unless the temperature gets above something like 25 degrees in their offices. So, you know, there is these are kind of sensible measures. I mean, particularly, obviously, when you're talking about these Northern Hemisphere societies that have very severe winters, you know, these are a big changes. I mean, one of the major changes that they're recommending, of course, is the replacement of oil and coal-fired boilers in all new and renovated buildings. So that's kind of just a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these are the sort of things that they're needing to do, and they require some real effort because of the, you know, the traditions with boilers in these countries.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so that's a massive output of carbon emissions in Europe. Luckily, we really only get to trouble at the upper end of the thermometer when things get really hot. So maybe that's something we could think about here. We're talking about this citizens' assembly that's been held in France over, well, it's a 9-month period all up, and it's reported in last month to President Emmanuel Macron, who who's now saying that he's going to deliver it directly to the French Parliament. And it's about how to reduce carbon emissions. One of them is cutting the working week. Now, already France only has a 35-hour week and they want to cut it even further to a 28-hour week because the argument from the Citizens' Assembly is that it's necessary to cut emissions because that would make you consume less, produce less and therefore work less. I love this thinking. I mean, it's really challenging some of the status quo. There's the transport. People would be discouraged from using private cars. There'd be support packages for train travel, a ban on domestic flights where the destination can be reached by other means. So, you know, this is a sweeping reform and it's super interesting to see how it will go down. I wonder, Luca, just to sort of question this for a moment. In the question that people were asked in the telephone call that invited them to be part of it, is there not a kind of coercive aspect to the question when the person is asked, the objective of the convention is to go further and faster in the fight against climate change, ... Your telephone number has been drawn at random. Would you like to participate? Now, the assumption in the question is that you agree with the premise that the fight against climate change requires a further and faster response?
Yes, I mean, obviously it's a leading question. I mean, let's not get into the debate as to whether climate change is anthropomorphically created or otherwise.
Let's not.
Because I think there is general consensus that that climate change exists, and that something needs to be done to address the impact of climate change.
Yes, but you could infer from the phrasing of that question that if you answered yes, you were already on board with possibly radical change.
Yes, I think that's right. Well, radical is always, you know, the status quo is the status quo, and anything that changes the status quo could be considered to be radical. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Right. So let's get hung up on radical as being some sort of guerrilla tactic or whatever. But I don't think it's a bit like Cassie. To my mind, it's a bit like marriage equality. There was a whole sense here in Australia and other countries that marriage equality was like a sort of needed to be addressed. And yet there was all this discussion, oh, no, it's not appropriate, da-da-da-da-da. At the end of the day, majority of the population went for it. And I think you'll find in Australia the same, as I think I'm making these assumptions. But, you know, look, there was the statistics about the Ipsos poll around the 14 countries. Most people are still concerned about climate change. So let's acknowledge
the 14 countries around the world where people responded saying, despite what's happening with the pandemic, we need to march on in the fight against climate change and have a commitment to it. Okay, so let's get to the upshot of this, which is I'm presuming that your foundation, New Democracy, and you yourself would like to see a form of this kind of debate here in Australia. Is that what you'd like?
Let me say, I'm not here, you know, on this program, your program, or just, you know, advocating to anyone in respect of climate change. That's not my position with respect to democratic reform. I'm interested in democratic reform. I think there are better ways to do public policy. The French have determined that they want to address the question of climate. That's their shtick.
Uh-huh.
Fine. What I endorse is the way they've gone about it.
You like the system. You like the idea of consulting the populace in this way rather than leaving these important debates, as you described earlier, to the adversarial environment of the parliament.
Yeah. And I suppose, to your point, the question was put, okay, France needs to go further and faster with this regard to meet their commitments. You know, by the way, hey, these were government commitments to the accord.
Uh-huh.
It's not as if this was dreamed up by some sort of echo terrorist again, sort of thing. So, you know, whatever they want to do, the people who responded, the 50% of those people who were contacted with phones that were actually working and responded positively to be in the pool, do you say that they are the people who are greenies? But essentially, what we would like to think is that they are actually just representatives of the population at large. They're not necessarily conservative or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just finally, give us an idea of how you would see this kind of process happening in Australia. Now, obviously, we've got a massive challenge with social distancing right now. But maybe that's also an opportunity, because I wonder if there's something that can be, if there's a way of doing this that allows us all to watch the process so it's transparent. So maybe we watch it on television or via the internet or something, and maybe the whole process is done for a audience, for an open eye, but maybe remotely because of the challenges. Have you thought through that?
Well, there are the people who were involved in designing and overseeing this process are colleagues of ours in France. They're part of a broader network that we have of deliberative democrats, of practitioners and academics internationally. And we're all working on this online challenge, how to do these conventions, these deliberative forums, rather than face-to-face online. The challenges are not so much in the plenary sessions where the 150 come together and they all sort of, certain representatives of them go up the front and relay the deliberations that have happened in the smaller groups. It's the smaller groups that are not easy to actually manage and view online. Mm-hmm. Because, I mentioned there were three elements to deliberative democracy. One is representation, the other is authority, and the third is deliberation. The best form of deliberation is actually in a small group of only 6 to 7.
Yes.
Not 150.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those small groups, you give everyone the opportunity to say their piece, and they don't feel pressured. They don't feel like they've got public speaking experiences. And it's much more deliberative and less confronting for people who are not used to public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as we know, there are just as good ideas that come from the timid as the assertives.
Yeah, so those small groups are key. And the last thing you'd want is for it to become like, a reality television show like Big Brother or Gogglebox or something.
Correct.
Where people perform for the cameras or who are then shamed or cancelled for their opinion. So that would be problematic, yeah.
That's right. And you don't want people, if they know they're on television and there's a wider audience, it does hamper their ability to sort of, their incentive to sort of really come forward with even, most stupid ideas,
mm-hmm.
which may prove to be actually quite valuable, but, at the time, because of this larger audience. So leaving aside the question of the wider public actually viewing the process, which can be done, but, done in restricted fashion, as I said, not really putting their noses into the small group deliberations. There are a few key things in these small group deliberations, like, people have got to learn to let other people talk, so people have to understand that they can't dominate those discussions. And, and they have these issues about sort of critical thinking and bias, et cetera, which are introduced at the beginning of all of these sessions to make people aware that, there are certain aspects of deliberation that are best done when one understands certain issues around one's own thinking, one's own biases, one's own approach to evidence and experts, etc. So all of these things are actually part of the process of deliberation.
Yeah. See, Luca, this is the real challenge. You're talking about respectful, constructive, polite discussion with profound subjects. This is a big challenge.
And to Cassie, to the point, this is what is not happening in Parliament. And people see this. The current dialogue that happens in Parliament, I mean, leaving aside question time, which is, but it is seen to be adversarial, point scoring, and people are turned off.
Wow, this is one of the most interesting ideas. Every time I hear about a citizens' assembly, my ears prick up because I find it such an interesting and refreshing challenge to the way we do business.
Thank you.
Well, good luck with this. I would certainly like to see a large. I know you've done examples of this in Australia. I'd like to see a large scale one. I'd like to see one where the general populace was engaged in the process as well, but under those safeguards that you talked about.
We'd love to see it, Cassie, of course. And I think people will eventually come. I mean, France is now leading the way in respect of this climate change issue, but there are a whole lot of number of other countries that are coming forward with this approach to any number of public policies.
Yeah, the Irish have done it, haven't they?
And The English are doing their own climate change one now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for opening our eyes and also for your enthusiasm for a better and different way to do our social change and our political change. Always good to talk to you, Luca. Fantastic.
Thanks for including me, Cathy, and having your ears open to these sort of things. Good on you.
Thank Good you. One. Luca Belgiorno-Nettis. He's the founder and director of New Democracy, a not-for-profit research organisation which is really focused on political reform, changing the way we have these big discussions. He's also managing director of Transfield Holdings and Prisma Investment and, a real advocate for this kind of discussion to be held in a formal and properly organised and funded way. Wonder what you think.